From trends and specialty diets to indecipherable food labels, from expensive equipment in food reality shows on TV to ingredients in processed foods that have nothing to do with nourishment, it is remarkable how complicated food has become. Today we are reversing the clock. A new book is bringing us back to the future. Home cooking for everyone. Simple, fun, and totally delicious. That's our topic in this hour here on An Organic Conversation, your show on everything that makes life worth living. I'm Helge Hellberg. There's an element of the local organic food movement that speaks of simplicity. And more than ever, it's what's needed the most. In this world of speed and transactional versus relational interactions, slowing down, making things simpler, and going for quality over quantity is the antidote and can dramatically improve one's life. A new cookbook is reminding us of that, and it is written by one of the absolute leaders of the organic movement, Maria Rodale. She's my guest in this hour as we return to realness. Home cooking for everyone, simple, fun, and totally delicious. All that and more is coming up in just a minute here on An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg, and a thank you to our underwriters. This show is brought to you by Batiste Rum, the first eco-positive rum of the Caribbean. Ask for Batiste Rum at Trader Joe's and Whole Foods and other fine retailers. More information, batisterum.com. That's batisterum.com. And thank you also to Earl's Organic Produce, a national distributor of organic fruits and vegetables that has been sourcing solely organic produce for over 20 years. From grocery store to company cafeteria to caterers and personal chefs, anyone can buy from Earl's Organic. Certified organic produce at earlsorganic.com. Home cooking for everyone. Simple, fun, and totally delicious. That and more when we come back right after the break. Stay tuned. And we're back here to An Organic Conversation. A new cookbook is in town, and it is written by one of the absolute leaders of the organic food movement, Maria Rodale. Home cooking for everyone. Simple, fun, and totally delicious. That's our focus in this hour. And I'm speaking now with Maria Rodale, the author of that amazing new book, Scratch, Home Cooking for Everyone, Made Simple, Fun, and Totally Delicious. She's joining us today from Pennsylvania. Maria, do we have you on the line?
Yes. Hello. It's good to be here. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. I'm sure these are busy times for you as the organic movement is growing and your leadership is so essential in it. You still had time to remind us of kind of not even the simple pleasure that would kind of underserve the importance in this fast-moving food world of of diets and labels and all that. And you kind of created this pause for me with that book, Scratch, that we want to talk about today, to just, wow, we don't need half of all this if we just remember how food was grown, how it's being prepared, what it should taste like, and how we should eat it. Really simple. I do want to start off, though, with your role. You have been an organic and healthy lifestyle pioneer for decades. Your grandfather founded the Rodale Institute, of course, a great research center, incredibly important for the organic movement. How much has all this influenced you? Did organic always make sense to you, or did you have a time where you felt like, you know, this organic thing doesn't work for me, I'm going to study whatever fashion and then come back? How has your involvement in organic happened?
Well, I spent the first 7 years of my life not being aware that there was any other way to live other than organic, or eat other than organically. And it was so delicious and so simple that I think I took it for granted. And then as any child grows up and looks around and meets other people, you know, you question, oh, you know, why are other people doing things differently? And I definitely had my period of rebellion where I went off and tried lots of other things. And I think that, you know, that's positive, and everybody should question and challenge their assumptions.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
You know, I found some, you know, great things that I've kept in my life, and I've also returned back to the simple and familiar things from my childhood, because I realized that's the most nourishing and loving way to eat and feel good, nourish myself and my family. So, but I'm not in any way, I don't judge people, because I've been judged and I know that doesn't feel good. And I'm all about moderation and making your own choices about what to eat and what's right for you, and not trying to enforce that on other people.
Yeah, and that's incredibly important. Of course, judgment isolates us further or separates us further. At the same time, you know, I don't know if comparing you to the Martha Stewart of organic living, but for sure the Rachel Carson of organic living, really, you are one of the absolute leaders of this movement, and you've celebrated the organic lifestyle without alienating anyone, but really showing it and making it possible and accessible through various magazines. And really your entire life, your entire career is dedicated, not just career, but life is dedicated to moving that topic forward.
Thank you so much for both of those comparisons, but especially Rachel Carson. That's quite an honor to be in her in the same sentence with her.
And I'm not the only one thinking that. I mean, you know, that's how the movement, I believe, thinks about you. And knowing this, is it agriculture, lifestyle, and then there's food? Is food really always where your greatest passion lied and still lies? Or how do you connect the two or the three?
Well, first of all, they're all connected. And I think what is, you know, I never became a scientist like Rachel Carson because I was afraid of math, but I definitely love looking at systems and nature and trying to, and people and humanity, and understand, you know, what causes things to happen the way they happen, and why do we do the things we do, and what's important in terms of moving forward and making the world a better place. And it's a lot easier to see what needs to happen when you can take a step back and look at the whole system and the bigger picture. So it is all connected. You know, you can't grow food one way. You have to grow food many ways. And you can't just eat one way. You have to eat in many ways and respect people's cultures and the work that everyone is doing, even the people who think they're improving the world through chemical farming, which, of course, you know, I don't agree they are, but I have also seen that the most powerful change, and this is from being a magazine and book publisher, is not necessarily through making the government set up rules, but changing people's hearts and minds, and they drive the market, and then the market changes. And then when the market changes, eventually the farmers change. So we're in a moment where more and more people want organic food and eat organic food and are demanding organic food, but we need more organic farmers to feed that feed that hunger. And when we have more organic farmers, the environment will improve, the economy will improve, all sorts of good things will happen. So you can't just pick on one thing and expect it to solve the bigger problems.
And very true. And I am eagerly wanting to get into the book, but I do at this point need to ask you, of course, we're facing about the loss of 1 million farmers over the next 10 years that will reach retirement age family farmers, which is 50% of our agricultural basis in this country of about 2 million family farmers left. What is the antidote? More demand? Like how do you, what forces can somehow at least cover the loss of family farms and with that the land, the loss of land, and keep it in agricultural production and stimulate a new generation being excited about, which is happening, it's just not maybe happening fast enough. What's your take on all this?
I have been, you know, to visit a lot of farmers and talk to farmers, and I think it's actually okay that the average age of the American farmer is towards retirement age, because those people who are farming, you know, conventionally and chemically, you know, they don't have a vested interest in changing. Mm-hmm. They, you know, they don't want to admit that they might have done things the wrong way, and honestly, they did things to the best of their ability.
Of course.
So there is a transition that's going to happen, and the great news is there are many, many young farmers, young people who are excited about being farmers. What they don't have necessarily is access to land or capital to invest in becoming an organic farmer. And so one of the things I've been talking about is starting, not me personally, but you know, we need to see more banks that support the transition to organic farming. And we need more organic farming training programs, which we are doing at the Rodale Institute, both mm-hmm. with young people and with veterans,
right.
which is both healing to the earth and healing to their...
post-traumatic stress, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm optimistic, but the, you know, the big missing piece right now is access to capital. But I also know that there's a lot of venture capitalists who are interested in buying conventionally farmed land and transitioning to organic. So I think
Great.
We're poised on a big new wave of progress, and I hope we can all make it happen.
Great. May it be so. I'm speaking with Maria Rodale, the author of Scratch, Home Cooking for Everyone Made Simple, Fun, and Totally Delicious, a great new cookbook that kind of brings us back to basics in the most delicious sense possible. In this hour of an organic conversation, Home Cooking for Everyone. Maria, we're going to take a quick break and then we finally get into the book. But since I had you on the line, I had to ask you, because of all your knowledge and influence and experience in the organic food movement, to hear about your concerns or solutions or thoughts on what is the most pressing. That is Maria Rodale. She is joining us today from Pennsylvania. Stay with us, Maria. We'll be right back with more, and then we'll talk about some yummy food and recipes. Does that sound good?
Thank you.
Okay,
yeah.
Stay tuned. This show is brought to you by Bowman College, a leader in the field of holistic nutrition and culinary arts. Become a nutrition consultant or a natural chef at one of their campuses, or learn from home in a self-paced mentored distance learning program. For more information on a degree in holistic nutrition or culinary arts, bowmancollege.org. And Fry Vineyards, America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Fry never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Award-winning wines at frywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com. And we are back here to an organic conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg. Home cooking for everyone. Simple, fun, and totally delicious. That's our topic in this hour. And we are joined by Maria Rodel, the author of Scratch, a book entirely about home cooking and meals that are simple, fun, and totally delicious. She's the CEO and chairman, of course, of Rodel Inc. That's rodelinc.com, and also the founder of Maria's Farm Country Kitchen. That's rodelsorganiclife.com/by Maria. Maria, what inspired you to create Scratch? I said in my intro, we are looking at food labels that nobody can decipher anymore. There are thousands of ingredients allowed in highly processed foods. And you kind of made us pause with this book and say, look, this is all way easier if you just consider a few basics of where, when, how, what you're using and how to use it. And it's really a delicious and critical reminder. I hope I didn't answer the question now for you, but why Scratch?
Well, you know, I'm in the media publishing business, and when blogging started many years ago, I thought, you know, I learn better by doing, so I'm going to start a blog, and I'll just share some recipes. And what I saw was that there was a real hunger, no pun intended, for super simple recipes. And anytime I said from scratch, it really popped, and it pops every year at Thanksgiving, you know, mashed potatoes from scratch, you know, homemade stuffing from scratch. Mm-hmm. And in all my travels to farms or conferences, you know, I see people and we start talking about food, and food is just such a personal and emotional thing. And, you know, I had an experience going to a conventional farm conference in Iowa. And, you know, what do you talk about when you're sitting down with people at a lunch table? You know, you start talking about food and pie. And, you know, pie is a perfect example of, you know, a lot of people love pie. But it doesn't really matter if you make it organically or not organically. I mean, it does matter. It matters deeply. But we can unite over a love of pie. And then maybe I can help people learn that, oh, if you try this organic flour that hasn't been, you know, desiccated with Roundup before it's harvested, and, you know, you...
Or these pasture-based, you know, eggs.
Right. And, you know, fruit that's in season.
Right.
You might enjoy it. And I think it's... I believe in starting where people are.
So it's an invitation that you wrote, really?
It's a gentle, loving invitation to start where you are and learn how to cook if you don't know how, and if you do know how, learn how to cook organically, which isn't that different. It's just about making choices. And also in my travels, I learned there's a lot of people who are terrified of cooking. You know, they don't know the difference between, you know, we assume people are much more sophisticated than they are, mm-hmm. because the average person may not know about where food comes from or what's the difference between one kind of food and another. So I really wanted to just guide and help people to learn about how to cook from scratch in a more kind and gentle way for themselves and their family.
That's so great. And it reminds me of a story that a friend just told me a week ago, where there is that person knows a woman who raised their kids not using fast foods or processed foods. And so their bag of chips is a bag of spinach. And that's what they grew up with. So she uses, you know, straight out of the bag, three times washed spinach with some nutritional yeast. And she started eating that in front of her kids as the bag of chips substitute. Uh-huh. And now that the kids are 4 or 5 years old, they are getting upset and say, Mom, you don't share the spinach. What's wrong with you? Give us the, when they're on road trips and whatnot. So it's amazing how what you are saying is the environment we create.
Yes.
In conversation or through your great book, that can become reality, right?
Even yeah, and in I this think advertised. Tastes are really formulated when you are young. So it's really yeah. important to expose your children to lots of different foods and let them try things and even, you know, not ban things, because, you know, I
of course, that's what we want the most then.
Right. I did grow up in a house where, you know, there was a lot of conflicted emotions around sugar, and I don't think that really helped anyone.
How is Scratch, your new book, Home Cooking for Everyone, Made Simple, Fun, and Totally Delicious? That's scratchcookbook.com. That's the website for the book itself, scratchcookbook.com. How's the book structured? What will people find?
Well, they'll find it's structured like a day, you know, so there's breakfast. There's salads, pasta, soups and sandwiches, snacks, main courses, side dishes, and of course dessert, which was the toughest chapter for me to figure out, because I'm not a natural baker. I'm more of a savory cook, but there's lots of great recipes. There's over 200 recipes and something for everyone.
And you call it, back to basics, without highly processed ingredients. You really call it comfort foods, which for many people, it suggests something heavy, but it doesn't necessarily need to mean that, right? What does comfort food mean to you?
Comfort foods are foods that do satisfy your stomach and your soul and your brain. And
great.
I did come to the belief that fat is actually good for you. We need fat. So there are things in here that are way higher in calories and fat than seem to be, would be traditionally defined as healthy. But I think that in the mix of a whole diet, it's important to have days where, if you want macaroni and cheese, crispy, gooey, cheesy macaroni and cheese, have it. And then, and the next day have a salad. And eat, if you're going to eat an egg, eat the whole egg, because nature made the egg whole for a reason. We don't know necessarily what all those reasons are, but I trust nature more than I trust some scientific researcher somewhere, because while I am a huge fan of science, if one thing history has taught us is that we will always get it half right and half wrong.
Well, and even scientists now, at least for sure, say that science is only the current state of knowledge, right? What we didn't know 40 years ago, we knew then 30 years ago, and what we didn't know then, we know now. So vitamin C was discovered 100 years ago, and now we know of hundreds, if not thousands, of bioflavonoids that aid in the uptake of vitamin C, which were completely unknown. So science is only a snapshot in time of where current wisdom stands. And you're right. You're saying nature has been around for billions of years.
And, vitamin C is a perfect example where you can, your first choice should be to eat an orange or a grapefruit and then...
Not the powder.
Well, if you don't have access to that, then, take a vitamin or a powder. But trust nature first.
Yeah. And even then, if you need to take that powder, take it with a meal so that there's maybe, the closest to what an orange would bring to the table, literally, and available.
Because in that real orange, there's so much more that we don't even understand or know about that is part of, healthy, nutritional, and nourishing satisfaction.
So, Scratch, let's go through some super easy and delicious recipes. Maybe if you have an example of one or two of your favorites for breakfast, for lunch, and for dinner and or dessert, just so people get an idea of what they will find when they buy the book.
Well, I'm a big egg lover and eater, and one of the things I do, again, I don't assume that anybody knows anything. I've had a lot of kids, teenagers, who are just starting out, say, well, I don't even know how to cook an egg.
Or in college, right, when they first time have to cook for themselves instead of the TV dinner, here's a chance to just save money even. Yeah, great.
And then, on the other hand, you have the foodies and the chefs who are like, oh, my God, if you don't cook it this way, then you're, a failure as a human being. And
okay.
So a simple recipe I have is silky buttered eggs, which is basically scrambled eggs with butter. But it's kind of a way that it took me like 20 years to unlearn all the other things I had learned. And it's just, put some, pasture-raised organic butter in a cast iron skillet and turn the heat on slow and scramble up some eggs, the whites and the yellows, and cook it slow. And in 3 minutes, you'll and put some salt on it. In 3 minutes, you'll have like the most delicious thing that you can have. There's
Love
a lot
that.
More complicated recipes than that, but that's a good example. I spent years making pesto, decades making pesto, but then always wondering, why does sometimes it turn brown?
Oh, yeah, good one.
Some people have different hobbies, but, you know, what I did was did a whole bunch of tests in my kitchen, and I tried, you know, three or four different approaches, and, you know, I made my kids taste, you know, every one of them, and the answer to keeping pesto really green just shocked me. It just was counterintuitive to everything I knew, but it really works, and that is blanching the basil before you put it in the, the blender.
Really?
Yeah.
Why, and it's, do you know why? What's happening with the oxidative?
It's probably just sealing in, you know, I'm not a scientist,
fine.
So I don't know the chemistry.
But it works.
It works. And it actually makes it really easier, much easier to make the pesto. So there's a pesto recipe
so great.
That is delicious. And then, well, there's tons of things. I mean, Italian, Australian, Pennsylvania Dutch, all kinds of things. But the other recipe I like to talk about, which is, again, super simple, is just roasting a chicken, because I think a lot of people feel super intimidated by it, and they think, oh, I have to brine it, I have to truss it, I have to baste it or do all these things. And, you know, after years of experimenting, I realized the most delicious chicken is one that you stick in the oven and let it cook. And that's it.
And what do you no salt, no anything? Do you add some?
I put salt on afterwards. I mean, you can put it on beforehand, but I actually think it tastes better when you put the salt on afterwards.
So you just buy a whole chicken, of course, already gutted and all that from Whole Foods or a natural food retailer.
I buy an organic chicken from, you know, my supermarket.
Right.
And I put it in a metal roasting pan because you want to make a pan gravy afterwards.
Uh-huh.
Which is
with fat or with water or just...
The gravy?
No, the chicken. How do you put it in? Do you just put it in dry, or do you add some water?
Put it in dry.
Really?
Put it in dry. I put it in at like 375, cook it for, you know, depending on the size, like an hour and a half. You know, your typical chicken will take an hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it's done, you take it out. You pour all the juices from inside the chicken into the pan, put the chicken on a separate plate, and then put some, like about a cup and a half of water in with some flour and stir it up and gather up all the brown crispy bits and fat and juices, and that's your pan gravy.
Wow.
Which goes really well on mashed potatoes or rice.
And you're right. I mean, we are so used to buying, there's almost nothing more expensive than the processed food bar at grocery stores, right? Where you can get pre-cooked items. If you look at the pound price, it's obscene. It's convenient, I get that. And yet you're saying if you can just pop in the chicken at night and in the next morning for the next 4 days, you have home-cooked half the price or less fresh and you know what's in it. Is that the message?
Then you can take that the leftover bones and make stock or bone broth. So the thing, you know, we only just got a Whole Foods in my mm-hmm. Region, and I was really excited, and I took my daughter and we said, we're going to get dinner at Whole Foods. And what I noticed is that even though it's fresh and maybe organic but probably not, it's been sitting out all day.
Yeah, of course.
And it doesn't taste fresh.
And most processed foods even in prepared trays and all that, they often don't use organic ingredients. So really the only way to know what you're getting is by you doing it yourself.
Yeah, and it's so, like, in the hour and a half that chicken is roasting, you can either cook other stuff or you can, like, sit down and read a magazine.
Nice. We're speaking with Maria Rodel, the author of Scratch, a great new book. It's Home Cooking for Everyone, Made Simple, Fun, and Totally Delicious. That's Scratch Cookbook. .com. And of course, it is the Maria Rodel, CNO and chairman of Rodel Inc., and also her blog, founder Maria's Farm Country Kitchen. That's rodalesorganiclife.com/by Maria. Check it out. It's beautiful. rodalesorganiclife.com/by Maria. Maria, we want to talk about the holidays that are upon us. Thanksgiving, of course, and Christmas soon after. Do you have some tips? How do you move through those days? I mean, you touched on that just now. If you pop in a chicken in a pan for an hour and a half, in that time you can work on other things, or you can actually not work and the mm-hmm. food will be done. There's no real cooking required. What are your best tips to make it through the holidays coming up?
Well, first of all, there's tons of holiday recipes. You know, all your basic holiday favorites are probably in this book, because, you know, I've got a lot, you know, all my cooking is for my family, basically. Mm-hmm. I've hosted tons of holidays. And it's, while there's not a specific chapter on how to time everything, you know, what I always like to do is, you know, a week ahead, make a list of what you want to serve. And like I said, there's tons of great recipes in my book for stuffing, mashed potatoes, pumpkin pie, lots of fish recipes. If you're Italian and you need to do the seven fishes Christmas Eve dinner, roasted, you know, you roast a turkey basically the same way you roast a chicken. So it's exactly the same thing.
I've never heard of that, actually. Can you just segue into that real quick? Even though I'm German, what's the seven fish for Christmas Italian tradition?
Well, I was married to an Italian, and so Christmas Eve, there is the tradition of you try to eat seven fishes, and I don't even know why, but it was like, it's the night of fish, and then typically you go to midnight mass, and then you can start eating meat for the next day. So it's more of a food tradition, I think, uh-huh. among Italians or Italian Americans than it is a firm religious tradition.
Yes, uh-huh. Great.
So there's lots of, you know, kind of festive seafood recipes.
Nice. Yes.
And but you know, make a list of what you want to make, mm-hmm. and then some things you can make in advance. Shopping is a big part of preparation, making sure you have all the right ingredients so that you're not
planning and planning even for shopping. That's, if you don't have that, you will most likely not experience the least amount of stress.
Yeah, and then you do the math of the timing. So, you know, the turkey's going to take 3 hours. But I think the biggest challenge I have found, and my daughter has found as well, because she lives in New York City and has a super tiny kitchen, mm-hmm. but she hosted Thanksgiving last year, is managing the oven space. So, and sometimes what she'll do is cook things like stuffing or the casserole dishes a day or two ahead, and then just put it in at the end to heat it up uh-huh. quickly. So
you're saying the what is it, staging, or the frequency of when you cook what is what makes it stressful if you don't do that at the end.
Yeah, you want to basically work backwards. Uh-huh. But the other thing to remember is that the holidays are not about having everything be perfect.
Yeah, or you slaving yourself to death, right?
Or you, and then, you know, becoming like the martyr, the mother martyr in the kitchen,
yeah.
you know, or the father martyr. It's really about being grateful and sharing, you know, time with family. So get people involved and have them bring dishes and work together in the kitchen. And, you know, also a big fan of putting out a big plate of cheeses and crackers, which I also did a recipe on how to make crackers from scratch, and fruit and cut up vegetables so that people aren't getting cranky
antsy.
And hangry
yeah.
if things
so
get a little
true.
Off schedule.
That's
and then if they do, you know, you just laugh.
Sure.
I'm a big fan of just like admitting that things are messed up and laugh about it.
Well, even in that, you're reminding us that what it's about, right? The idea that the woman in the house will cook for 3 days, and then when everyone has eaten, she's the first to do dishes. That is so passé. Wherever we went there, let's just reverse it. Let's make it a community experience again.
Yeah.
It is about relational interactions, not transactional interactions.
And I think, you know, the the business efficiency part of me does this little equation of like, okay, how much effort am I putting into this? How long will it take to eat it? And is it worth it?
So four days to 20 minutes, doesn't it?
So that's another benefit of keeping things simple is, you know, you're creating like a beautiful, delicious meal without feeling like you put more effort into it than it's worth in the time it takes to people to eat it.
Sure. Great. Well, we're almost out of time, and I'm speaking with Maria Rodale, the author of Scratch, a great book reminding us of what is actually important. Home cooking for everyone made simple, fun, and totally delicious. That's scratchcookbook.com. Maria, I have two questions for you. One is, of course, we can't let you go before you share a simple favorite dessert recipe with us. Do you want to give us your thoughts there?
Sure. I think my favorite of all is the heirloom molasses cake. And it's a very, I don't know if you're familiar with shoe fly pie.
No.
But it's kind of a, you know, molasses, gingery, spice cake that's super simple with like crumbs on the top, you know, that.
Nice.
And it's so easy. And what I love about it is I found the recipe for it and like a sticky old recipe card in the back of my mother's closet when we were cleaning out her house. And it had, you know, things like use a spoonful of butter. Well, you know, what size spoon? I don't know. So I had to go back and recreate it. And I know it's a very old recipe. And when I taste it, it just tastes like love and family. And,
home.
And it's not too sweet.
Mother. Yeah.
It's not too sweet.
Yes.
Molasses is super good for you, and I love it.
Oh, that's great. Thank you. And of course, the last question, are you, what's your message with the book, and are you going on book tour? Where can people experience you in person?
Well, I don't have any specific tour plan, but if people want me to come and speak or sign books or visit, they should contact me through Rodale Inc. And the message of the book is, anyone can cook. Don't be afraid. Cooking from scratch is delicious and affordable and fun. And I just want people to focus on the importance of cooking their own food and spending time together in the kitchen and nourishing themselves and their families, not just with food, but with the whole experience of feeding the whole family.
Including oneself. Of course.
Yes, especially oneself.
Especially. Thank you so much, Maria. Thanks for making the time, and happy holidays to you.
Thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure.
Take good care. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye.
Bye. That is Maria Rodale, one of the absolute leaders of the local and organic food movement, who's all about inclusion, and who joined us in this hour of an organic conversation on home cooking for everyone, simple, fun, and totally delicious. That's also the theme of her new cookbook, Scratch. That's scratchcookbook.com. She joined us today from Pennsylvania. And of course, Maria Rodale is the CEO and chairman of Rodale Inc. That's rodaleinc.com. And also the founder of the blog Maria's Farm Country Kitchen. That's rodalesorganiclife.com/by Maria. We're staying with the topic of food, in this case, before it is cooked, actually, the moment it is harvested and the moment you find it in the store, the update from the world of healthy produce. Here is what's in season. And with us now is the voice of the San Francisco produce market, Mr. Earl Herrick, the owner and founder of Earl's Organic. Earl, are you there?
Hello, Helga.
Ho,
can,
ho, ho,
you
I'd
can
say.
Feel it. Well, that might be a little premature,
yeah,
but definitely
totally.
Gobble, gobble, gobble.
Gobble, gobble. Yes, we just had a great interview with Maria Rodale on her new book, Scratch, cooking really with the most basic ingredients and making it really simple and delicious. And it's such a good segue to what's in season, of course. The holidays are upon us at this point, and you better start planning with Thanksgiving coming up in just a couple of weeks. What is happening on the produce dock in that regard, with that angle particularly?
Yeah, well, you know, this time of year is you know, when business is about relationships and anticipation, right? And this time of year, if you're not anticipating the amount of product that's going to be demanded in the shopping,
you'll be so behind. Yeah.
Oh yeah, there's no way to recover.
Yeah.
And all the retailers know this, and they start as we. So a wholesaler generally is about a week or so ahead of a retailer. So we've been stocking up on all the what we consider hardware, and that's all the potatoes and winter squash and onions. So we've been stockpiling those items because, you know, we can get them out of the way. We can finish that and have them there, and then we can put our focus on beans and
mushrooms. On the software.
Exactly. And that's really what's going on. When you think of Thanksgiving, the very basics are incredibly simple, really.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, I don't get into a big deal. I do eat turkey, and it's a very, you know, simple thing, and then it's yams, potatoes, and beans, and a cranberry sauce, and make sure you got some onions and some mushrooms around. And those are the real staple items. And what's wonderful is they're all almost always in abundance as long as you plan it appropriately. If you wait till Tuesday or Wednesday to buy, you know, your mushrooms and your beans, you're probably going to miss out. I recommend the Monday before Thanksgiving, you want to get your most tender stuff. That would be your mushrooms and your beans, because those are high desirable items that can be limited in supply.
And you can cook those, you know, the next day or the day after, and you're still a day ahead of Thanksgiving, and you can just warm the dish up. That's what Maria Rodale recommended.
Okay.
So you don't have to, even if you buy them 5 days prior, you're not going to wait for Thanksgiving morning to necessarily cook them. You don't have to.
Well, not only that, but you know, 3 or 4 days in your refrigerator certainly
are not a problem.
Are not a problem as long as you're buying them fresh. This year I think we're in a real good place. And I'm thinking beans mostly, because beans are one of those items that it can be a feast or famine. And this year, we're going to have Mexican beans, which we almost always have. And they're super high quality from a grower named Covilli. He's with these people for years, and we're going down and visit them again this year. So there's going to be a huge Mexican crop of lots of different beds this year. There's more acreage allotted to organic programs every year, and this year is the most ever, so there'll be... as the winter goes on, I'm kind of a little sidebar to Thanksgiving. As the winter goes on, you're going to find some very reasonable prices, unless some weather hits and knocks out some crops. But otherwise, good supply of product this winter. But to go back to the mainstays of Thanksgiving, of course, we want to talk about yams and potatoes too. Those are some of the things that some people may only eat yams. This is the only time of year they do it, though I recommend it. Wonderful food for you.
And you're right, it's a mindset, right? I mean, there's no reason. Often people want to plan for Thanksgiving the week off, and that's when they buy their yams. But there's no reason to not buy yams, potatoes, and maybe even cranberries, and definitely winter squash now, right?
Absolutely. And those are wonderful items throughout the winter.
Yeah.
Those are hearty, basic foods that...
Have them around always, right? If you need to throw in a yam in the oven for half an hour, 45 minutes, that's a little meal.
Yeah, and historically, you know, that's what you would keep in your root cellar.
Mm-hmm.
And because they're hardy and they'll hold, and it still holds true now. They impart what we need, that hardy food for out in California, we don't have to fight the elements much, but through much of the country, you know, you have that hardy food. There's wonderful varieties of winter squash around that can be used so many different ways. You know, the classic ones are acorn and butternut, buttercup, delicata. Some of these I've used in the past making pies. I love the butternut and the delicata for pie making, that sweet potato pie.
And especially with winter squash, we are talking 4 months storage, no problem, right?
Oh, Definitely, with the right humidity and about 50 degrees, they're rock hardy.
Yeah,
they're wonderful, colorful pieces that adorn your table, even outside of being used. I mean, blues and grays and wonderful yellows and golds. It's really beautiful stuff.
Quick question about mushrooms. I'm a mushroom lover. There's maitake and shiitake, and of course portobello and oyster mushrooms, and most of them are, even organically, are not harvested wild. They are still farmed.
Yeah.
Now with the rain, does that have any effect on more production or less production, or is mushrooms just at this point so figured out that it's steady? And yes, for Thanksgiving you want to get them early so that they don't sell out. But
yeah, you know, they're very hardy. They're in terms of their production, it's all inside. I mean, I don't know about 100% inside, but the ones we deal with are inside, and they're protected from the weather.
Uh-huh.
Portobellos, creminis, and whites, those are real popular ones for the stuffing, just as side, as cream.
So just get them early enough so they don't sell out, but prices,
so many people want them.
Uh-huh.
I mean, this is the time of year where people come in and buy pounds, really absolutely pounds of mushrooms, whereas any other time you're buying maybe a half a dozen pieces of mushroom.
Yeah.
Now they're buying pounds for their recipes, and it becomes pretty outrageous. That's one item you definitely want to keep early. And the way I store them, which helps, I take them out of the paper bag and I put them in little plastic containers, little tubs, with a paper towel on the bottom, which absorbs any moisture, and they keep fine for a week easy.
Oh, nice. Okay.
So, there's a little tip there.
And the paper bag would dry them out?
Dry them out. Now, that doesn't mean it's bad. It just means that they're dry.
Oh.
And then if you put them in plastic, they will get slimy on you.
Yeah.
So I think put up a little paper towel on the bottom of a little plastic Tupperware, if you will, and in a week, they're just like brand new. What other items? Cranberries, of course,
is
the mainstay.
How do you deal with them? Do you buy them in like a jar already or just loose?
Well, you certainly can buy them in a jar already done, but I like to buy them loose. They're grown in Canada, Massachusetts, Wisconsin, even Oregon. We're getting ours from Canada this year.
And you cook them down yourself?
Yeah, and it takes just a little bit of water, a little bit of a little lemon, a little sugar, and they cook right down.
Uh-huh.
They can also be frozen. And they will last for really over a year frozen. But fresh, you want to look for solid pieces if you're able to buy them loose, or sometimes you either buy them in a plastic bag, and sometimes they come in a clamshell. But they should be good high color, firm, but it's hard to find every single berry to be firm because they're almost all harvested at a certain time
mm-hmm.
and then shipped. So there's going to be a little bit of attrition there.
Sure.
But they don't ruin. There's no collateral damage, if you will.
Right.
But before, you want to rinse them before you cook them, and just take out the bad, the cracked ones or the ones that are no longer whole. And you may lose a couple, but it's great for the bargain that it is.
Nice.
The interesting thing about them is how they're harvested. They're either harvested dry or they're harvested wet. So they're grown in a field, and if they're wet harvested, the field is flooded. Then they take a machine and the machine
skim the surface, right?
Yeah,
basically.
Yeah. Now the wet harvested ones, generally we don't see. Those are generally gone right to processing.
Mm-hmm.
And cranberries are used in so many things nowadays because the wet harvest, they don't hold up quite as well.
Right.
So the ones we generally see are dry harvested, where you go in and pick them. They're a little more labor intensive, but you get better quality berry, and it's really what you want as they're generally a couple weeks old by the time you get them, which does not mean they're not fresh. Just that's the nature of harvesting cranberries.
Nice. Cool.
Yeah.
Wow, that gets me in such Thanksgiving mode. It is really one of my favorite holidays of the year. It's all about food. If you do it right, if it's really about community and, sharing food and not stressing out and planning ahead, as you said, yams, potatoes, winter squash, and onions.
I'm sorry, enjoy the time that you have, in shopping and cooking. I mean, the journey is so enjoyable, and then you have that wonderful banquet at the end of it.
And the leftovers for days to come.
That's right. That's right. It's a great time, you know, to celebrate relationship and bounty and be with your loved ones.
Nice. Well, thanks for making time. I know this is, you're always busy, but this is really prime time, right? You guys must be moving massive amounts of organic food from local farms. So this is important for farmers right now. This is important for your business and for us, who eat organic to just honor the all year efforts of the farmer. If you can eat organic right now, that's what you're getting. Yes. So thanks for that, and thanks for making time for us.
Hey, Helga, it's always my pleasure, and I've kind of created quite an appetite here.
Yeah, me too. Happy Thanksgiving. If we can, we'll have you back next week.
That'd be great.
Okay, talk soon. Thanks, Earl.
Okay.
Bye.
I know.
Wow, that's a packed hour, all about food. Maria Rodale about her new book, Scratch, a new cookbook, home cooking for everyone made simple, fun, and totally delicious. Again, the website is scratchcookbook.com. And what's in season, healthy produce, eat organic when you can. Happy holidays here from An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg, and we'll be back with another episode next week. Take good care. An Organic Conversation is a proud production of the Organic Media Network. Associate producer, Kristen Ponger. The show is made possible through the fantastic support of our underwriters, Bowman College, a leader in the field of holistic nutrition and culinary arts. Become a nutrition consultant or a natural chef at one of their campuses or learn from home in a self-paced mentored distance learning program. For more information on a degree in holistic nutrition or the culinary arts, bowmancollege.org. Thank you also to Earl's Organic Produce, a national distributor of organic fruits and vegetables that has been sourcing solely organic produce for over 20 years. From grocery store to company cafeteria to caterers and personal chefs, anyone can buy from Earl's Organic. Certified organic produce at earlsorganic.com. And Fry Vineyards, America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Fry never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Award-winning wines at frywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com. And Batiste Rum, the first eco-positive rum of the Caribbean. Ask for Batiste Rum at Trader Joe's and Whole Foods and other fine retailers. More information at batisterum.com. That's BATISTERHUM.com. For more episodes and our podcasts, go to anorganicconversation.com. And of course, you can follow us on facebook.com/anorganicconversation. Our Twitter handle is talkorganic, and we're also on Instagram. I am Helge Hellberg, host and executive producer of An Organic Conversation. And we'll be back with another episode next week. Thank you so much for listening.